We like this young core. We like this group of players, and this feels a lot like 13.
It's time for the Neil Huntington Show every Sunday on the Pirates Baseball Network. For all Pirates updates, breaking news, and information, as well as chances to win unique prizes, follow the Pirates on Twitter at Pirates, add Pirates to Snapchat, like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Pirates, and on Instagram at Pittsburgh Pirates. Find out more at PittsburghPirates.com/connect. It's the Neil Huntington Show every Sunday on the Pirates Radio Network.
And we welcome you to San Diego, California, where today the Pittsburgh Pirates conclude their 11-game, three-city road trip, the finale of the series against the Padres. Bucks have won two of the first three games of this four-game series, and they will send San Diego native Joe Musgrove to the hill against Cal Quantrill. Greg Brown here in the booth where it is raining here. They actually have a tarp here at Petco, and it's on the field. Although it's much lighter right now than it had been about an hour ago, and it should clear out of here in about an hour. We're on the telephone line with the Pirates general manager, Neil Huntington. Neil, first big question. Did you know that Petco Park and the Padres owned a tarp?
I actually asked Clint that when we spoke on Friday, that there was a threat of rain. I said, well, I don't think there's a tarp there. And he said, no, we think there is, and they've had to use it. So it's an interesting time in San Diego. You go to San Diego expecting 75 and sun, and sounds like you've had some interesting weather since you've been out there.
Yeah, it's 59 degrees right now. And, boy, it's been an interesting road trip, Neil. I guess we'll go back starting with last night. And Clint Hurdle also said before the game that you and he had discussed, and you'd talked about this openly, that you may, almost out of necessity, have to go to an opener. And I guess with you look at what Nick Kingham and Stephen Brault had done as starters, didn't maybe live up to their standards and their hopes. And so you went with Montana Dorapo last night. And just your thoughts about the process, what you thought of it last night and going forward.
Well, there's no question that you'd prefer to have five starters that you believe are better than the relievers that you would use in that type of scenario. But when, you know, when it's Chris Archer or Jameson Taillon or Joe Musgrove or Trevor Williams or the way Jordan Lyles has thrown the ball this year, you want those guys out there. You want them from the start of the game, and you've got complete confidence that they can get not only the first three or four or five hitters of the game out, but they can get you into the sixth, the seventh, and hopefully in this day and age, the eighth inning. When you don't have that, you start to look at different ways to carve up those first six innings to get to your high-leverage relievers with a lead. And that was the concept behind it, is how do we carve up those first six innings? And we thought that Dorapo gave us a really good chance to get through the first inning without giving up a run or much damage. And not only did he get through the first, you start to look, is it one plus? Can he get through two innings? And Montana threw the ball very well. Got us through two innings, and the idea is you're trying to use your best pitchers against their best hitters, and there may be additional situations as we look forward with different relievers, or maybe it's Montana again, where we want them to get through that first, into the second, or through the second, to have our the next guy who can give you some innings maybe face the bottom of the lineup twice instead of the top of the lineup twice. And you do a better job of matching up, you know that your reliever is going to face the first three hitters. Now, how deep does he get into the game after those three hitters? But you can work your matchups there. If you can go alternate arms, you may force a platoon-type situation where last night Kinsler faced the right-hander that first time through. If Andy Green had chosen to go with Garcia, now when Brault comes into the game, he's got a choice to make. So you might be able to get a platoon advantage if you go opposite side opener from your bulk guy. But really, it's a different way to carve up those first six innings to ideally have a lead to be able to hand it over to your high-leverage relievers in the seventh, eighth, and ninth.
So it right now there's no one listed as Wednesday starter. That would have been, I guess, Jordan Lyles' regular start with the off day on Monday. You're going to start Lyles on Thursday against the Rockies. No one listed right now, TBA. Very likely scenario then that we see this so-called opener on Wednesday against the Rockies?
It could be, absolutely. And part of the process, Brownie, is we focus on winning today's game today. And so when we go out to win Tuesday's game, we don't want to hold the potential opener out of Tuesday's game at the risk of losing Tuesday's game. So we'll manage a handful of starts here looking forward until we can get Trevor back. We're going to need to be creative, and we may have some TBDs in there where it could be Nick Kingham, it could be Steve Brault, it could be Chris Stratton, or it could be an opener, depending upon what we need to do to do everything in our power to win that day's game, and we'll worry about the next day's opener or starter when everything plays out.
Neil, why not just throw Francisco Liriano back into the rotation? If you look at what he did with a bad team last year, really numbers weren't bad, and he starts clean innings. He's been tremendous, as was the case last night. Why not just, for the time being, for a handful of starts while Williams is out, have Francisco Liriano back in that rotation?
Something that we've discussed, the challenge is having guys that are not stretched out get stretched out. And it's hard to add 15 to 20 pitches an outing at the major league level. In spring training, we worked to get Francisco to that 3-50 and had some challenges to get him there. No question, he threw the ball tremendously well last night, but he also has a ton of value for us out of the bullpen in that role. And so does he get multiple touches and multiple opportunities to help us win each week? Or is it one, you know, maybe two starts, depending upon how the week falls? We talked about it. It's a conversation that we've had. But it's not like if we were to say, okay, Francisco Liriano is going to start on Wednesday, there's no way we could ask him to go really any more than 50 pitches given what his workload to date and how he's been stretched out to date is would allow him to do.
Neil, what do you think about this whole the opener thing in general? It seems to be taking off. I see the Yankees threw Chad Green today and pitched a clean first inning, then gave up runs, I think, in his second inning of work. And where do you think it's headed in terms of baseball as an industry?
I think if you ask almost any general manager, we'd much rather have five starters that we feel really good about getting us deep into games. It's when you don't have that you start to look at different ways to carve up, whether it's ideally one spot in your rotation. If you start to get into two, now you better have a really deep bullpen. You better have a lot of multi-inning guys. You better have a lot of optionable guys to make it work even with two or three spots. Now, Tampa Bay has made it work phenomenally well. But I think if you ask most managers, I think if you ask most general managers, they'd prefer to have five starters that they have confidence can get the top five hitters out multiple times over the course of a game. But when you fall short of that, the creativity takes over. And I do think that could be something that we see into the future, but I don't know that you'll ever see the industry shift to the opener concept for five for all of your starts. Everybody would love to have Max Scherzer, even though he's struggling this year. You'd love to have Max Scherzer. You'd love to have Clayton Kershaw in his prime. But with what Jordan Lyles is doing for us this year, what Trevor Williams had been doing, there's still extreme value in starting pitchers getting deep into games when they're able to do so. But when you don't have that, the creativity of an opener to allow you to carve up those six innings in a different way, that there is value to it.
We'll continue with the Pirates general manager, the Neil Huntington Show, as the Pirates and Padres meet here in San Diego. More to come on the Pirates Baseball Network. We're back on the telephone line with the Pirates general manager, the Neil Huntington Show, as the Buccos and Padres meet. Final game of this 11-game road trip, off day for the Pirates tomorrow, and then host the Colorado Rockies on Tuesday night. Neil, tell us what you know of the injury to Trevor Williams right now. I know he's shut down for at least 10 days, but it looked as though he really hurt that side. He was grabbing his right side after a couple of pitches the other night.
Yeah, you know, Trevor actually injured it on the swing earlier in the game and was trying to work through it and just got to a point in time where the discomfort was such that he couldn't work through it. Again, at this point, we'll reassess in 10 days and how he's healing, how he's feeling. Is he ready to start strengthening? Is he ready to start baseball activities again? And as we've talked so many times, Brownie, with pitchers especially, the time down will dictate how much time it's going to take to get a guy back up. But we remain cautiously optimistic that this is not a long-term, but it's certainly not a short-term situation either.
Did you consider bringing up Mitch Keller?
We did. We've talked a lot about it. And as we talked probably, three or four weeks ago, Mitch is in the process of solidifying the addition of a slider/cutter. For the last four starts where he's utilized it more frequently and better, Three of the four have gone fairly well. The one start, he was done after three. So we're still keeping our eyes and ears on Mitch and listening to our special assistants as they go through town, Larry Broadway and Kyle Stark as they go through town, our pro scouts, and then, as importantly, our AAA staff. And our conversations have continued to be getting close, but we'd really like to try to solidify this change before we try to have him go attack major league hitters.
Neil, you're convinced that Chris Archer is 100% despite a shaky first outing?
We are, and again, the challenge that we've talked about so frequently with injured major league players coming back, we believe there's incredible value in rehab starts or rehab assignments to knock some of the rust off, to get back into game settings. Unfortunately, most major league players don't want to go into a rehab, or if they do, they want it to be a very short time, and this isn't a knock on Chris. This is just kind of where the industry is at this point. Guys don't want to go out on rehab, and so you pay the price for that when they come back, and hitters come back and all too frequently go five for the first 25, or a reliever comes back and scuffles in his first outing, or a starter, in Chris's case, scuffles in his first inning. What was encouraging was how his stuff played and how good his stuff was in the second and third. And a few things go a little bit differently in that fourth inning, and it's a completely different outing for Chris. So we're looking forward to getting him back out there and getting him rolling.
How about the decision, Neil, to option Richard Rodriguez, and where you think he stands?
Clint has had a ton of success, and our major league staff have had a ton of success unplugging hitters, giving them a breather, letting them do some work in the tunnels, and then plugging them back in three or four days later. Unfortunately, with where our pitching staff is right now, we don't have that luxury to just not use a pitcher for three or four days. We've had to use these relievers heavily. And that's what essentially this is. It's an unplugging of Richard to allow him to take a deep breath, to go work on a few things specifically to try to get that fastball riding at the top and above the top of the zone, to get the slider to play more consistently, and to just rebuild some confidence and give him a few opportunities away from a leverage inning at the major league level, or even in this situation, a few innings away from the major league level. But we're very much believing Richard's going to get back on track and come back and play a key role for this bullpen.
And deciding to not have him actually go there until Tuesday, so it's more than it really is kind of a mental physical break, completely away from the club. Well, I guess he's with the team, the Pirates, but in terms of reporting to the minor leagues, you don't want him to think about it for a while.
We did, and that was our guidance to him. When a player is optioned or outrighted, he technically has 72 hours to report. More often than not, we'd like the guys to get down there and get going, because we're optioning them for a reason, whether it's they haven't been used or they haven't been playing or pitching very well. In this instance, we instructed and guided Richard to take the 72 hours, to take every bit of the 72 hours, to get a mental break, get down there, work on a few things on the side, on flat ground, maybe even a bullpen, and then get him back into games. But there's no question Richard Rodriguez is going to be back and is going to play a meaningful role for us.
Neil, just now saw Corey Dickerson out, despite the heavy drizzle here and the tarp still on the field, out there throwing again in shallow left, not a long distance, but is he making progress? Do you think he'll be starting a rehab anytime soon?
He is making progress, and he's been able to long toss to the furthest distance that he's been able to get to at this point in time without any setbacks, and we'll keep our fingers crossed and try to build on the good. And as the good days add up, the next step would become a rehab, and hopefully we'll be able to get him out sooner than later. But again, we really need to just continue to build on the throwing program, and hopefully he continues to have good days.
Neil, Lonnie Chisenhall last played for Indianapolis on Wednesday. He's not been in the lineup, and again today. Did he have a recurrence with that calf situation?
No, Lonnie's healthy. Lonnie asked, and we were supportive of his request to take a few days and to take a short period of time and get some things in order. And we've been supportive of his ask to do that.
when Chisenhall and or Dickerson return, what's the situation going to be in your mind with the outfield? Right now it's been a four-man crew, essentially the rotation with Cabrera, Polanco, and Brian Reynolds in the corners with Marte playing almost every day, though Marte gets today off. How do you envision this, Neil?
It's a great question, Brownie, and it seems like we're going to have too many outfielders, which is something we couldn't say for much of this year. And again, we still have some bridges to cross before Chisenhall and Dickerson are back, and we have to make those decisions. But once those guys are back, we'll still have to protect Gregory. Now, hopefully, we'll be able to protect him less and less as the year goes on. But we'll be able to keep Starling sharp and give him a day here and there, keep Melky sharp. Melky's best role is playing semi-regularly but pinch-hitting a lot. And then even once Dickerson and Chisenhall come back, neither one of them is going to be ready to go and answer the bell every day. So I would imagine we'd continue some sort of rotation. And Brian Reynolds has played well enough to earn consideration to remain on this club. So we're going to have a decision to make, and we'll have to work through that process if we get to that point in time.
And Francisco Cervelli also out of the lineup again today. That's four straight days. Clint Hurdle deciding, I guess, to, in his words, unplug a kind of a struggling player offensively. Elias Diaz, bat seems to be coming to life. Do you anticipate Cervelli being back in play when the team returns to PNC Park on Tuesday?
We do, and again, this was another one of the instances where Clint decided to take a player that was having some struggles and give him some time down. Cervi's been eligible and available if we wanted to use him for defense late or pinch hit late. The games have been such that Clint has not felt the need to put him in, and so today would be the same. But yes, we anticipate Cervi being back in the process as we return off the road.
And, Neil, how will you distribute playing time at AAA? I'm sure you didn't anticipate getting Jacob Stallings back, but you were able to do that, get him through the waiver process, and he returns to the organization.
He does. And again, we think the world of Jacob, but love what he does with our pitchers. He swings the bat well in AAA and is a productive player down there. And you look around the industry, and we thought there was a pretty good chance that he would get claimed on waivers. And fortunately for us as an organization, maybe not so fortunately for Jacob, he cleared. We outrighted him. He will be the primary catcher down in Indianapolis. And Christian Kelly and Stephen Barron will figure out some at-bats between the two. And, we'll work. And again, it's one of those situations where you can never have enough catching depth. But Stallings will be the primary guy there. We like what Stephen Barron has done. He can really catch and throw. And we like Christian Kelly as an interesting catcher as well. But we'll work through that process between AA and AAA and work that playing time. In this day and age, catchers rarely catch 5 days a week, let alone six. So there'll be some playing time to distribute amongst those guys.
Let's step aside right now and allow our stations to identify themselves at the bottom of the hour. And again, we invite you to come out to PNC Park, the three-game series against the Rockies starting on Tuesday night. The Pirates and Rockies will play in the afternoon, a matinee special, 12:35 on Thursday, and then a fireworks night on Friday when the Dodgers come to town. Get your tickets at pirates.com/fireworks for that one. We step aside on the Pirates Baseball Network.
KDKAFM HD1 Pittsburgh. This is Pirates Baseball on the Pirates Radio Network.
We have much more to cover with the Pirates general manager. The Neil Huntington Show continues from San Diego on the Pirates Baseball Network. Back at rainy San Diego as the Pirates and Padres conclude this four-game series. Joe Musgrove on the mound for the Pirates today and Cal Quantrill for the San Diego Padres. We're on the telephone line with the Pirates general manager. We still have some players we want to check on in terms of the injury to, for example, Keone Kella. And whether you think he will be ready anytime soon, Neil, and whether he would need a rehab.
Yeah, Keone's making great progress, feeling better. He should be ready for a sim game this week, middle of the week probably, and we'll judge how that sim game goes as to what's the next best step for Keone.
Neil, in terms of players, and I know we touched on this a couple of weeks ago and how great it is, for example, to have a guy like Josh Bell in that lineup every day. In this day and age, so many players take time off. They get hurt, bumps and bruises. But a credit again to Josh Bell for being out there every single day. And you touched on Gregory Polanco. He's back sooner than a lot of people thought he would be. Kudos to him for the hard work he's put in. And as you say, he's not ready to play every single day. I'm sure he'd like to. But he looks a lot like the player that was maybe the best right fielder in the league before he got hurt in September of last year.
He swung the bat really well, and he's working hard to minimize the exposure of the lack of throwing arm strength that he has. But he does. Brown, you're absolutely right with both of these players. In Gregory Polanco's case, he was pushing us to get back quicker, especially with the injuries to the outfielders with the club. He wanted to get back and help his teammates, and he pushed us aggressively. And typically, we try to hold those guys off. But in Gregory's case, it was just a matter of lacking arm strength. The bat looked good. The legs looked good. And so we talked through it as a staff and felt that if we could continue to help him minimize that exposure by doing some things and then just be aware that he was going to need more rest than we probably were going to want to give him early in the process, that he could get back out there. And in Josh Bell's case, man, he just answers the bell every day. But he does. And he shows up. He's a threat when he steps in the box. He's gotten so much better defensively at first base. Again, such a great worker and such an intelligent player. And we've talked with Josh about taking a day here and there. Marte's taking today, and then he gets the off day tomorrow, and so we call them stacked off days. Those are huge for players. Even if Marty has to come in and defense or pinch run or pinch hit late, he still has incredible value in the two off days. Josh Bell wants no part of that. Now, we're probably going to have to force one here at some point in time, but with the way he's swinging the bat and the way he's playing, and he looks strong, he feels strong, we'll continue to roll him out there.
Neil, what do you see of a guy like Josh Bell? I was asked this the other day on a radio show that you compare him, you know, even growing up watching the Pirates play, and you know, you hate to put too much pressure on someone when you compare him to a guy like Willie Stargell, but he certainly has hit the ball with the authority of a Willie Stargell. But do you compare him to anybody? Have you seen anything like this in recent years?
Yeah, you know, he's in one of those stretches where over a 30-day or 45-day stretch, he's been one of the best offensive players in baseball. You know, we've had Andrew McCutchen do that at various times. I just know it's a lot of fun to watch him. The league is going to make adjustments on him. What's fun is he's hitting fastballs, he's hitting changeups, he's hitting breaking pitches. You're seeing fewer of the off-balance swings. His eye-hand coordination is one of his biggest gifts, but it also can be one of his biggest challenges. As long as he retains the discipline to take walks, when they want to pitch around him or they have to pitch around him, and he makes them come into the zone and he gives them a chance to make mistakes, he's going to continue to do a lot of damage. And again, it's been fun to watch his progression so far this year.
More to come with the Pirates general manager, and we'll do that. We continue from San Diego. The Neil Huntington Show rolls on the Pirates Baseball Network. A lot of ground to cover once again on the Neil Huntington Show, our final segment. And Neil, a story, I believe today in The Athletic from Rob Beardtemple about J.B. Shuck, who also cleared waivers and is back in the organization. I asked him a couple weeks ago after he had made that pitching performance, that scoreless inning, whether he would consider being a two-way player, and he certainly liked the idea. He said, anything that will keep me in the big leagues. Now, since then, he's down in the minor leagues, and now apparently that's what you and the organization have decided to do, try and make him a pitcher and a position player.
Yeah, and JB pitched a lot in college. I'm sure he's looking around at the modern trend of two-way players and saying, hey, I did this, and he did. In 2008, I believe, was his draft year. He was a starter, starting pitcher at Ohio State. He was also a position player. So JB did this two-way player thing well before it became the in vogue. And just watching him throw the one inning up here, knowing that he's had some interest in throwing some pens, knowing that he was willing to be the position player that was designated to pitch in lopsided games, knowing that you know he's getting older, knowing he's got a good arm, We asked him if he would have interest in throwing pens, and part of the reason he was excited to stay with us and to go to the minor leagues was because we were open to having him see if this can work as a left-handed reliever, part-time outfielder, and we'll see where it goes. JB told us he had a really good changeup in college. He had a usable breaking ball. And again, if you go back and look at his numbers, this is not a shot in the dark. This is taking a guy back to what he used to do pretty well at some point in time, not too long ago, and he was fired up to take that opportunity.
There really have been, of course, a lot of stories regarding the 2019 Pirates, the fact that the club is starting the day over 500, and in fact right now three games over 500, only three back of the Cubs in the Central, a testament to the grit and determination of this team despite 20 players on the injured list this year. But there have been a lot of, aside from that general story, really neat personal stories, including Montana Drapo, who had some off-field incidents. Jeff Hartlieb, tell us about him. He made his major league debut last night and had a 1-2-3 ninth, so he had that great feeling of being able to shake hands with his teammates after a W.
Yeah, Jeff is a great story of a young man's perseverance and ability to overcome hardship. He lost his mom while he was in college, played basketball more than baseball in college, didn't have a great junior year, but our scouts stayed with him, and I would say in large part because he lost his mom during that junior year of college. But the young man just kept showing up and kept working to get better. Our scouts did a really good job of identifying some of the things that Jeff could do, the athleticism, the untapped potential. Jeff worked hard with Scott Mitchell and our pitching coaches throughout our minor league system, and they tapped into that 98-mile-an-hour sinker that you saw last night. And he's got the capability of a mid-90s sinker. He's fearless. He can throw a slider, too, and much like Montana, a guy that wasn't drafted very high at all, that's had to work for everything they've gotten, but have ability and are capitalizing on their first taste of the major leagues.
And, Neil, we've got a couple of minutes left. We are going to talk on our Down on the Farm segment coming up in just a few moments on our pregame show to what I think would be the greatest story of the year if somehow, some way, he found his way back to the major leagues. Used sparingly with the Seattle Mariners in 2011 and 2012. He's bounced around. He's played independent league ball. He actually asked the Pirates for basically a tryout. Trayvon Robinson, sorry to ask you in less than a minute, is there any chance that we might see him down the road?
I hope so, because it would be a fantastic story. He's gone from being a really good prospect to out of Major League affiliated baseball, swinging the bat really well, playing good outfield defense. The challenges we just talked earlier in the show, we've got a bunch of outfielders that we're about to get clustered here. But he's been a good example. He's been a good player. We've talked about calling him up a couple of times. But so for him to at least be in the conversation has to be rewarding. But there's no doubt he would much rather be able to get back to the big leagues this year. But he's been a really good young man and has done everything we've asked of him. And we're pulling for him and hope he will get a big league opportunity at some point this year.
Neil, thank you so much. Great stuff as always.
Thanks, Brandon.